I'm delighted to welcome back to the Radio Cafe David Barsamyan. He's award-winning producer and host of Alternative Radio, which airs on KSFR every Monday at 4 o'clock and again on Sundays at 5. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks very much, Mary Charlotte, and it's always a pleasure to be on one of my favorite radio stations in the entire United States, KSFR.
Yay, thank you. We wanted to get your perspectives on public radio itself and how it's changed and how it's developed since you first started doing it. What was the public radio landscape like when you started doing radio in the 80s?
Well, it was much more daring. There was much more risk-taking. There wasn't the fear of looking over your shoulder and worrying about whether you did a report or a feature or a news item on a particular corporation and, you know, whether that corporation was going to withdraw its funding from your station. This was because there was much more generous public funding of radio and TV, specifically NPR affiliates and community radio stations, and PBS, the public broadcasting system. So you had fairly generous public support, as was envisioned in the 1967 Public Broadcasting Act, the last great act of Lyndon Johnson before he, you know, got completely caught up in Vietnam and his presidency ended. But that, if you go back and look at that document, and if you listen to public radio, and most stations, I'm saying, not all of them, obviously, and PBS, you'll see that the networks have really drifted into very safe zones. There are very few programs like alternative radio, let's say, on these affiliate NPR and PBS stations. And so the climate, the political climate, because of attacks, because of, in most important, attacks on the budget, has driven stations into a very conservative mode, much less likely to step out of bounds, much less likely to challenge the hegemonic thinking, you know, the conventional wisdom, as it were. And that, I think, has been really noticeable over the last 25, 30, 35 years. And when I started AR in Boulder in the mid-1980s, I was confident that there was a large radio audience for progressive views here in the United States. What's happened since then over the last 30 years has been, a steady drift to the right. In fact, when you mean steady, it's rather sharp drift to the right. And this has resulted in more pablum, more palaver, more game shows, more antique road shows, more Garrison Keillor, as much as I like him, and the like, and a lot of, particularly on CBS, I would call them charlatans that hawk their wares about, you know, living forever and reduce aging and grow your hair back and things like that.
It strikes me that if you were trying to start a show like Alternative Radio right now, it would be more difficult than it was when you did almost three decades ago. How did the show actually begin?
Well, it began out of frustration with already existing media, and particularly its total dismissal of Noam Chomsky, who I've been very closely associated with over, you know, many decades now. I couldn't believe that he was nowhere to be found on the public radio dial. And so that's really prompted me to start this long format. And that, too, is kind of a dinosaur today, because people's attention spans have been deliberately reduced. So we have, you know, the age of Twitter. We have very sharp, short, haiku-like messages. And there isn't a lot of space for complex, elaborate, detailed, fact-driven analyses of current and past events. And I think that's absolutely critical, because if you're arguing something counter to the dominant mindset, You know, if you were to suggest that U.S. foreign policy may contribute to international terrorism, well, that's almost a heretical idea. So if you say something like that, then you need to have the time and space to develop your argument, because people have not heard that kind of perspective. But if you say the opposite, if you say that there's no connection between U.S. foreign policy and terrorism, you don't need to present any facts, because that's the dominant mode, that's the trope that's repeated over and over again on the nightly news, on, you know, all the radio talk shows and all the major TV talk shows as well. So that, I think, addressing that space is absolutely important, and alternative radio has tried to do that, you know, over these well nigh 30 years. So I began here in Boulder at a community radio station. I made lots of mistakes. I was a volunteer. I made a fool of myself on the air multiple times, not just once or twice. But finally, I figured it out. You know, it's not organic chemistry. It was rocket science. And I got better and better at editing, at narrating, at asking questions when I'm doing interviews. And thus, I launched AR. And the first program was, in fact, featuring Noam Chomsky.
It's interesting. I was thinking about, before we got together on the air today, I was thinking about what your show does and what it's done for me, because I've been listening to this show since probably the beginning of the 1990s, and it's a kind of myth-busting, and I have to say one of the myths is that people want short attention span sound bites. Maybe some do, but I have found doing radio that people actually really like a long format. They like to follow an idea. They like to listen to an interesting person for a period of time and follow it, and follow their argument. People from all demographics, not just like super highly educated college grads or PhDs or whatever. And another, I mean, there's so many myths that your show busts. Myths of free trade, myths of democracy, myths of equality. Do you see your show that way?
Yeah, it's very iconoclastic, which kind of fits my personality, you know, being a rebel from almost childbirth. You know, I do want to make people think. I want to encourage intellectual discourse. Ferment, I think, is very important for the well-being and health of a democracy. And in one way, I talk about what the corporate media has done to the culture and to the country and to the general population. It has, you know, it's kind of akin to a public health hazard. And we have to be really careful about being subjected to all the, you know, I'll use the term propaganda that cascades from the mouths of so-called objective news anchors, who are all paid, by the way, millions and millions of dollars, and also the, you know, some of the radio talk show hosts as well. So finding that space and holding on to it and making it grow is, of course, a huge challenge now in a culture that is more dominated by corporations. I don't think I'm saying anything controversial here. A culture, a political landscape, and economy that is more dominated by corporations than any time in U.S. history. And I think that poses serious challenges. It poses serious ramifications for the well-being and vibrancy of any democracy. And I don't think this is a left or right issue. I think this is, you know, this should reach all people, this notion that there has been a huge growth of corporate power at the expense of public power.
And that corporate power works both in direct ways like environmental destruction and in really insidious ways like getting people to have deep emotional identification with products as opposed to with people or landscapes or whatever the more kind of substantial things are in our lives.
Absolutely. I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. We get more and more isolated in front of our electronic devices. When I used to go into cafes not that long ago, people would talk to one another. You'd see, you know, very animated conversations. And now I'm sorry to report that in most instances, people are, you know, looking at their screens and are lost in some kind of electronic cyberspace. Now, I confess to doing it myself, but I think that contact is lost. We get further atomized the more time we spend behind screens. And, for example, my internet service provider is Rise Up, an independent group of activists based in Seattle, and their slogan is, you know, get off the screen, get into the streets. You know, so I think we need a kind of balance of that. We need the screen information, but we also need not forget activism and how important it is to engage in public issues. And I know right now you're trying to fundraise on KSFR, and I want to encourage people to call 505-428-1393, 505-428-1393, or toll-free 866-907-5737, 866-907-5737, and pledge to KSFR. It's really important that you keep the airwaves alive and healthy and support the kind of work that Mary Charlotte has been doing, you know, over the years, you know, really a tremendous contribution to the Santa Fe community.
We're talking to David Barsamyan, host of Alternative Radio, talking about public radio, talking about media. I think it's fascinating that your work in radio actually began with music.
Indeed. When I first arrived in Boulder in 1978, a new community radio station had just signed on, KGNU, and I had just come from India, where I had been going for many years, starting in the mid-1960s, and had studied Indian music, sitar. And I proposed this show. This radio station had just gone on the air, and they were looking for volunteers. So I said, hey, let me volunteer. You know, I don't have any job prospects here in Boulder. And I pitched a program called Ganges to the Nile, featuring music from that entire geographic expanse from South Asia to the Middle East. And lo and behold, within weeks, I was on the air. I was like dumbstruck. Wow. And as I said, you know, I made lots of mistakes, but, you know, that's part of it in terms of growing. So, yeah, the music helped get me involved politically in KGNU, and I started doing more and more political programs, and then the politics and alternative radio have overwhelmed the music, although I still listen a lot to Indian music, and I still love it. I really don't have time anymore to practice it because it requires an enormous amount of attention.
You actually studied with musicians in India and were a serious player yourself.
Well, I really was exposed to some of the greatest musicians in the world, unbelievably talented and gifted artists practicing Indian classical music. So that exposure was really my undergraduate and graduate education. I can't say that I've been formally trained here in conventional terms. I dropped out of college after just two semesters. But the training I got in India really broadened my mind. It was so valuable to be outside the U.S., looking at the U.S. through the prism of Indian media. This was at the height of the U.S. intervention and wars of aggression in Indochina, in Laos, Cambodia, and Vietnam. And it was remarkable to look at the world through other media. And the interpretation, of course, was very, very different from what was, you know, kind of the received wisdom here in the U.S. So I count my days in India as really the, you know, one of the high points of my life, and has really broadened my worldview. And I was, you know, I met a lot of poets, a lot of writers. I picked up some languages. So all of it, all in all, it was, you know, a wonderful, wonderful, enriching experience.
Yeah, I mean, to have somebody who is involved in reporting and news gathering who actually speaks Hindi and Urdu and other languages besides English, that in itself gives you an understanding of the people about whom you're reporting, and a perspective which is much deeper than the kind of shallow, quick in, quick out news reporting that we often get with, you know, with reason, I suppose, from the mainstream media. But tell us about some of the reporting that you have done in India over the years.
Well, I've focused quite a bit on one of the, I think, most important and most obscured and hidden stories, and that has been the ongoing rebellion in the area of North India known as Kashmir, where since 1989, about 70 to 80,000 Kashmiris have been killed. Hundreds of thousands have been imprisoned and tortured. Many, many thousands have been disappeared. To say this is not on the radar would be a gross understatement. It simply is not reported on anywhere except, you know, an occasional item in a newscast. And again, without context, it's difficult for people to process information if that information is not part of their regular diet. Let me use nutrition as a kind of metaphor for the problem with the corporate media. We certainly get full up with, you know, we're sated, but we're not nourished with what the production of the so-called news. And so if you introduce a new food to your diet that you've never had before, there's going to be some reluctance or hesitation, perhaps, to process it. And so that's why the corporate media should be declared as a public health hazard, and the Surgeon General should, you know, actively be warning consumers of corporate media to just watch themselves, because they could be seriously deluded, they can be seriously misled about what's going on. So Kashmir has been a big focus of mine in India, and also you may know that there are multiple rebellions going on all over the country. I mean, India projects this image of being the land of Gandhi and Buddha, and, you know, everyone's a vegetarian and practicing yoga and playing sitar. You know, some of those things are there, but India is a very violent country, and there are numerous rebellions that are going on that I think deserve our attention. There are also rebellions going on in neighboring Pakistan as well, which are even less covered. I'm thinking of the conflict in Baluchistan, which is an oil and gas-rich state bordering the Arabian Sea, and also Iran and Afghanistan as well. So those are some of the issues that I cover, you know, in India, working with, you know, great thinkers and activists and writers like Vandana Shiva, like Arundhati Roy, like Mutarik Ali, who's from Pakistan, Pervez Hoodbhai from Pakistan, and many others I've been fortunate to be connected with.
You were barred from entering India a couple of years ago. What happened?
Well, I arrived at New Delhi Airport with a valid visa, and I was told to step aside, a phrase you never want to hear at any airport. And I was then told that I would not be allowed to enter the country. When asked for an explanation, a piece of paper was waved in my face and said, "We have an order from the Ministry of the Interior that you're on a list, you cannot enter the country." I said, "But I have a valid visa. I've been coming to India since 1966. What's going on?" And this young man, fairly young, said, "You know, I really don't know. I'm carrying out orders, and we cannot allow you into the country." And that was 3 years ago. And here's, you know, the world's largest democracy, as it likes to tell the world, you know, barring fairly, you know, middle to old person from entering the country, even though I had a valid visa. So I'm still trying to figure out what's going on. It's impossible to get an answer from the Indian government. You go into this Kafka, you know, it's a Kafka-esque kind of situation. Letters are not responded to, emails are not responded to, even petitions signed by noted Indians went completely ignored. So it's very frustrating, and you know, I'm still fighting, and I'm still hoping to return to India, which has, you know, now entered a whole new phase with the ascendancy of Narendra Modi, of a right-wing Hindu fascist party. If you can imagine in the United States a candidate who becomes president who had been a member of the Ku Klux Klan, for example, that would be analogous to what Narendra Modi represents. He was part, a member, an activist of the RSS, which is an acronym for a right-wing Hindu nationalist fascist party, a straight-out fascist party that has targeted and killed Muslims, that was even responsible for the assassination of Mahatma Gandhi in 1948, because Gandhi was considered by these fanatics as too soft on Muslims, if you will.
Do you feel that you were barred from India because of the reporting that you were doing there?
I'm almost certain of it. And speaking out, you know, I'm interviewed when I go there. You know, I'm not only the interviewer, I get interviewed. And, you know, I made, you know, a very clear, unambiguous statement that the people of Kashmir have the right to self-determination. This is guaranteed to all peoples everywhere. It's enshrined in the UN Charter. I'm sure that certainly riled raised the hackles of right-wing Hindu fanatics who see Kashmir as some kind of sacred land that they must hold on to forever. I think, you know, that's probably, you know, contributed to my being denied entry into the country. But I'm not the only one. There are many other professors, scholars, even geologists, you'll be surprised to learn, who have been banned from India.
We're talking to David Barsamyan, host and producer of Alternative Radio, which airs here on KSFR two times a week on Monday afternoons at 4 and again on Sunday afternoons at 5. Now, you've talked about how public radio has changed in the last 3 decades or so. It's become less risk-taking, it's become more conservative, and we're talking about public radio, not just corporate or mainstream radio. What kind of responses are you getting to alternative radio from younger people? Are they listening? What are 20 and 30-something progressives listening to? How are they getting their media?
A lot of younger people are getting their media through the Internet. So web streaming and archival programs and podcasts, I think, seems to be the mode for a lot of young people right now. So it's a newer audience, and I think it's growing. I certainly hope it's growing, because I don't think we can depend on the stations forever. They're more and more stations have dropped, I'm sorry to report, alternative radio just in the last 4, 5, 6 years, because I believe of political pressure, of corporate sponsorship pressure, and the like. But the Internet is still a relatively free, let's say, area of information, although, you know, that may change if the FCC decides to create a fast lane, an HOV lane, and a regular traffic lane. Then there'll be privileging of Internet users, and I think that's probably something you've talked about on your program, and I think, you know, all citizens should be concerned about what the FCC is contemplating right now, which is a two-tiered system, which will, again, favor the haves over the have-nots. I mean, the genius of the Internet is that it is relatively democratic and accessible. Also, it is accessible to the surveillance state, which has mushroomed in the last few years, to completely have total information about our passwords, about our correspondence. The most intimate details of our lives are now known to the National Security Agency and other government surveillance and intelligence agencies. That's a real blow to democracy. And I think it's something that we who care about freedom and independence should be deeply concerned about. And I can think of no one better than Glenn Greenwald, who was recently featured on alternative radio to speak out on this particular issue, and Edward Snowden, Laura Poitras, Jeremy Scahill, and others. By the way, those are the really good people. Ask me, well, where are the good young journalists? Well, they're out there. You know, I just mentioned three or four of them. There's Matt Taibbi as well. There are really good journalists out there doing independent work in a very constricted and, I would say, dangerous atmosphere, because the government, particularly the Justice Department, under Eric Holder, who is no doubt taking orders directly from the White House, you know, is prosecuting whistleblowers, is prosecuting and threatening journalists to reveal their sources, is going right to the heart of information democracy and trying to curtail it, trying to constrain it and to limit it. And I think this again poses real threats for the communication needs of a democratic society, because if people don't know what's going on, then literally the wool can be pulled over their eyes.
What media sources, both in the U.S. and internationally, do you go to for your news?
Well, I was very happy to see Al Jazeera America start up about a year ago, and it has attracted some, you know, really fine journalists, and they do terrific documentaries on topics that are, you know, never broached in the corporate control media. So they have, you know, a website. They also have Al Jazeera TV, which is now widely available in the United States, albeit through a cable, corporate cable controlled system. I like The Guardian a lot. I like from London. I like the Hindu from India, Dawn newspaper from Pakistan, the Independent from London. There's some really good news sources. There are a lot of good websites here in the country as well. So I think if you look, you can find things. But often it takes a little bit of effort, since a lot of these groups, a lot of these news organizations don't have a lot of capital and therefore can't really get, the word out. I'm thinking about ZNet, for example, or Counterpunch. Code Pink has a really good website. These are all sources of information that I rely on. And, of course, people who send me items, people who send me information or alert me to things going on in their neighborhood, in their region, in their country, in around the world. And that's always a source of, firsthand eyewitness information about what's going on.
David, please tell our listeners, why should they give to KSFR right now?
Well, that's a very easy question. They should give to KSFR right now by calling 505-428-1393, 505-428-1393, or toll-free 866-907-5737, 866-907-5737. KSFR is an island of audio independence in a veritable sea of corporate control media. And when I started out, doing media, doing radio way back when, there were, maybe 40 or 50 corporations that controlled most of the media in the United States. That's down to a handful now. It's single digits. It's four or five. I think in Canada it's four. It's even worse than here. And the U.S. is five. And right now there are proposals for even more concentration, more media mergers and takeovers. Comcast is seeking to take over AOL, Time Warner. Murdoch is trying to take over another big media outlet, particularly cable TV. That's what they want, to not only control the pipes, which they've had for quite some time, the pipes to your home. They want to control the content, and they're moving now into content. So yes, Murdoch is trying to buy Time Warner, the big Hollywood studio. So all of these things are going on, and KSFR represents one of those islands of audio independence where you can hear alternative radio twice a week right there in the Santa Fe area. You can hear other programs that challenge the general consensus about the economy or about U.S. Foreign policy or what's happening with the environment, which I think is, you know, an absolutely critical issue that has to be mentioned constantly. The war on nature, as Vandana Shiva calls it, has been a relentless attack on our very home and jeopardizes the future generations in unforeseen ways and in very, very dangerous ways. I don't want to use apocalyptic language, but we have to be paying attention to these kinds of issues right now. And I urge everyone to call 505-428-1393, 505-428-1393. Be as generous as you possibly can be and give whatever is appropriate for your particular budget, you know, whether it's $30 or $300 or $3,000 or $30,000, whatever you can spare. Please call and pledge your support for KSFR. And I think if you do call, you'll get a copy, a CD copy of my latest program with Noam Chomsky called The State of Insecurity. It's a talk that he gave recently in Santa Barbara, California. And I think it really speaks to a lot of the issues we've been talking about today, the need for, the desperate need for independent sources of information. So please call KSFR right now. Do something for yourself and for your community. It's a win-win situation. 505-428-1393, 505-428-1393, or 866-907-5737, 866-907-5737. And I believe you can go online as well to pledge, ksfr.org. That's ksfr.org. It'll just take a couple of minutes of your time. You really feel good about yourself. You've done something for your community in a very concrete way by supporting independence in media.
David Barsamian is the award-winning producer and host of Alternative Radio, which once again airs on KSFR every Monday at 4 in the afternoon and Sundays at 5. David, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe, and we look forward to seeing you in Santa Fe one of these days.
Always a pleasure, Mary Charlotte. Thanks a lot.